she whispered.
It's okay,
Thalia said from the couch facing Chiri's chair, where she'd been pretending to read. Probably just some stray shrapnel from a missile our lasers destroyed.
What about the acid?
Chiri asked, peering at the upper corner of the suite.
There isn't any,
Thalia said, sternly ordering her own heart to calm down.
We're the only ones who use breacher missiles with acid. Everyone else uses explosives. Once our lasers destroy or detonate them, there's nothing that keeps coming toward us.
There was another set of thumps, 6 of them this time.
Except maybe a few small leftover pieces of the missile,
she amended.
What happens if the pieces get through?
They won't, Thalius assured her. The electrostatic barrier can slow them down a little, but more important is that the Springhawk has really good thick armor.
Okay,
Chiri said. But it was clear from her anxious expression that she wasn't really satisfied.
How come nobody else uses acid?
I don't know, Thalia said. I suppose it's not as impressive as explosives. Probably harder to make the missiles work, too.
How come we do?
Because when it works really well,
Thalia said, feeling a twinge of sympathy. When she was Chiri's age, the officers and caregivers would never answer her questions about things like this. Only later had she learned they'd been forbidden to talk to Skywalkers about these details. Probably still were, actually. Which meant Thalia would likely get in trouble if anyone found out about this. But she could remember feeling terrified during her ship's battles as she sat alone with her caregiver and wondered what was going on. Knowing how the ship's weapons worked might not be much comfort, but then again, it might.
If the missiles get close enough before the enemy lasers hit it, the acid will keep going as a big glob, she continued. Pretty hard to shoot down a glob of liquid. Electrostatic barriers can't do much to slow it down either. So when it hits, it starts eating into the metal of the hull.
So it opens the hull to space?
Not unless the hull is very thin or has already been damaged,
Thalia said.
But it can destroy any sensors or fire control systems and corrode any communication links that cross the area. Even better from our point of view, it blackens the hull metal and creates pits, both of which help the metal underneath absorb the next batch of spectrum laser fire we put there.
And that opens the hull to space?
It absolutely can,
Thalia said.
It won't wreck the whole ship, of course. You've seen how many emergency bulkheads the Springhawk has down the passageways. But it's a warning to the enemy ship that we have the upper hand.
There was another double clunk, farther away this time.
What happens if one of these pieces hits the viewport?
Chiri asked.
Probably nothing, Thalia said. The point defenses around the bridge are pretty good. And there are blast shields that can be raised if they see something big coming. And the viewport material itself is pretty strong and thick.
I mean, it's nice being able to see outside when we're flying somewhere,
Chiri mused.
But I always worry that we'll run into something.
It's a risk, Thalia conceded. But the viewports aren't just because we like looking at the stars. There are lots of ways that sensors and electronics can be damaged, or distracted, or confused. The bridge officers need to be able to actually see what's going on out there. There are also a couple of triangulation observation areas where other warriors can help aim and focus our attacks.
I guess that makes sense.
Chiri peered closely at her.
How come no one's ever told me this before?
They're not supposed to,
Thalia admitted.
Actually, there are a lot of things they're not supposed to tell Skywalkers.
Yeah.
Chiri made a face.
They treat me like a...
She broke off.
Like a child?
Thalia suggested.
I'm not a child!
Chiri flared.
I'm almost 10 years old.
Thalias's first reflex was to point out that 10 years old was well within the definition of childhood. Her second reflex was to try the kind of soothing there-there noises that her caregivers had so often given her. But as she looked into the girl's eyes, into all that fear and uncertainty, she realized neither approach would be any good. The two of them were far more alike than Thalias had realized until now. And for her, the only thing that could ease fear was knowledge.
I know,
she said, nodding tacit recognition of Chiri's assessment of herself.
More than that, you've lived through more pressure and stress in the past 3 years than most Chiss will face in their entire lifetimes.
Chiri's eyes turned away.
It's okay,
she muttered.
It's okay, and it's going to be okay, because you're strong,
Thalias said.
You're a Skywalker, and Third Sight seems to come with a special mental toughness. I don't know,
Chiri said, her eyes focused on something light years away that only she could see.
I don't feel very tough.
Well, you are, Thalias said. Trust me. And for whatever it's worth, most of the things they don't tell you, they also don't tell anyone outside the military. Most of what I just said, I had to dig out on my own after I left.
Did you get in trouble?
Not really. I got a few warnings, though.
Thalias made a show of wrinkling her nose as if in thought.
Oh, I suppose I might have gotten some other people in trouble.
That got her a small, tentative smile.
Did they deserve it?
I like to think the galaxy runs on balance, Thalias said. Those who deserve trouble get it, and those who don't, don't.
You really think it works that way?
Thalias huffed out a sigh.
Not even close,
she conceded.
Sadly. You hear that?
Chiri looked up, frowning.
No?
Exactly,
Thalias said, feeling a small sense of relief. There haven't been any more shrapnel thuds.
I think the battle is over.
I hope so,
Chiri said, straining her ears.
I hate battles.
So does everyone else,
Thalias said.
Well, there'll probably be some talking now. And Captain Thrawn will let the Leo Aoi know he could have flattened their whole planet if he'd wanted to. And then some more talking. Somewhere along in there, we'll be called back to the bridge, and you'll start us on the path for home.
I hope so,
Chiri said, a shiver running through her. Trust me,
Thalias said.
So that leaves us only two questions.
Chiri frowned.
Which ones?
What do you want for dinner?
Thalias said.
And whether you want to eat it now, or wait until your first break.
Memories 10.
Recruitment duty, Aristokra Zistalmu reflected as he awaited his visitor, was among the most tedious of tasks a family member could be assigned. Tedious and usually frustrating. Most of the time, the recruiter didn't even know why that particular person had been chosen. In this case, at least, Zistalmu knew exactly why Mithran Nyuru had been chosen. And he wondered if the Irizi family had gone completely mad. The expected tap came at the door at precisely the specified time.
Come,
Zistalmu called. The panel slid open.
Senior Commander Mithran Nyuru, reporting as requested,
his visitor said formally as he stepped into the room.
Senior Commander Thrawn,
Zistalmu said, nodding and gesturing to the chair in front of him.
I'm Aristokra Irizi Stalmustro.
Aristokra Zistalmu, Thrawn said, nodding in return as he lowered himself into the indicated chair. I was surprised you receive your invitation.
Yes,
Zistalmu said, keeping his voice neutral.
I understand you briefly visited the Irisi family homestead a couple of weeks ago.
Yes,
Thrawn said. I don't recall seeing you there.
Sadly, the press of Syndicure business prevented me from being at the event,
Zistalmu said.
You've made quite a name for yourself over the past few years.
Sometimes that name is appended to a curse. At least he recognized how polarizing his career and he himself were. Zistalmu hadn't been sure the man was even that self-aware.
Sometimes people don't appreciate your talents and skills,
he said.
I understand you've had some problems with certain members of the Meath family.
Thrawn's eyes narrowed slightly. I understood that the family still supports me.
Perhaps,
Zistalmu said, the bitter taste of resentment in his mouth. Why the Irisi family wanted this man was beyond him. And why they'd saddled him with the recruitment was even more opaque. But he'd been given the job, and there was nothing he could do but see it through.
I simply note that those who feel your exploits reflect badly on the family aren't reluctant to say so.
I'm sorry they're displeased, Thrawn said. At the same time, I have to fulfill my duties to the Expansionary Defense Fleet to the best of my ability.
I don't disagree,
Zistalmu said.
But I've asked you here to assure you that whether or not the Myth recognize your dedication, the Irisi family certainly does.
Thank you,
Thrawn said, inclining his head. Though, given the tensions between our two families, I doubt your support will help my position.
I believe the Irisi family was thinking of helping your position more directly.
A frown creased Thrawn's forehead.
How?
Mentally, Zistalmu shook his head. In the military realm, Thrawn had demonstrated a fair degree of insight and tactical ability. But in the political realm, he might as well have been dropped straight out of the sky.
I'm suggesting that you detach from the Myth,
he said,
and accept a position instead with the Irisi.
A position as Marish adoptive?
Not at all,
Zistalmu said, bracing himself. This was the most odious part of the whole offer.
That may be good enough for the Myth, but not the Irisi. We're prepared to offer you the position of Trialborn.
That's very interesting,
Thrawn said, clearly taken aback.
That's extremely generous.
It's no more than you deserve,
Zistalmu said. That had caught his attention all right. A merit adoptive brought in via military service automatically lost the relationship when that service ended. A Trialborn not only kept the connection, but if deemed worthy, could advance to the status of ranking distant, where his bloodline would thereafter be incorporated into the families.
And of course, coming in at that status means you wouldn't ever need to go through the trials themselves. Your exemplary service has apparently been deemed an adequate substitute.
I'm both honored and humbled,
Thrawn said.
I'm not certain how my detachment from the Myth would benefit the Irisi.
It would serve in many ways,
Zistalmu said.
Our overall presence in the military, well, that's a political matter. Nothing you need concern yourself with. Let's just say that we can always use another distinguished, high-ranking military officer. And the Irisi believe you're the best choice.
I see,
Thrawn said, nodding slowly, his forehead creased in thought. Zistalmu held his breath. If this worked, if Thrawn accepted the offer, then it would be finished. The Irisi would have him, and the myth wouldn't. Whether the Irisi would someday regret that was, of course, another question. But that was their problem. All Zistalmu needed to focus on was how a successful recruitment here and now, whether he agreed with it or not, would raise his own name and prestige within the family.
I appreciate your interest, Thrawn said, but I can't make a decision without further thought. Think as long as you wish,
Zistalmu said, keeping his face neutral, struggling to balance the mix of annoyance, regret, and relief. Was Thrawn really such a fool that he couldn't see how immensely valuable this move would be?
Just bear in mind that if you delay too long, some other up-and-coming officer might catch the family's eye instead.
I understand, Thrawn said. Thank you for your time, and for your offer.
He stood to go, then paused.
Your comment about distinguished high-ranking officers. It occurs to me that you already have one such in your family. Senior Captain Ziara.
Yes, we do,
Zistalmu said ruefully.
But not, I'm afraid, for much longer.
Senior Captain Irisi Aralani,
Supreme Admiral Jafosk intoned.
Stand forth.
This was it. Bracing herself, trying to keep her breathing steady, Ziara stepped forward into the center of the floodlit circle, facing Jafosk and the other two senior officers.
State your name,
Jafosk said in that same death knell tone.
Senior Captain Irisi Aralani,
Ziara said. Was he trying to be intimidating, she wondered? Or was that merely a side effect of his ultra-formal voice?
That person no longer exists,
Jafosk said.
That name no longer exists. You are no longer of the Irisi. You are no longer of any family.
Ziara held his gaze, a knot in her stomach. She'd known this moment was coming for the past week, and had anticipated it for much longer. But even with all that mental preparation, it was an unexpectedly emotional moment. Unlike many Irisi, she'd been born into the family, with no merit challenges, rematches, or trials to pass. She was a full-blood daughter, with all the privileges and honor that position bestowed. But not anymore.
The Ascendancy is your family,
Jafosk continued.
The Ascendancy is your home. The Ascendancy is your future. The Ascendancy is your life.
Ziara had heard those words many times over the past week as she practiced for the ceremony. But not until this moment, hearing them spoken in Jafosk's stentorian voice, did they seem real. The Ascendancy is your life. But really, hadn't it always been so? Once she made the decision to join the Defense Force, hadn't she effectively surrendered her future to the greater good of her people? And having offered her life, was it such a loss to offer also her ties to her family?
Senior Captain Irisi Aralani is no more,
Jafosk said. He reached to the table behind him and picked up a flat box.
In her place,
he held the box toward her.
Now stands Commodore Aralani.
Bracing herself, Ziara stepped forward and took the box. Through the transparent lid, she saw that it was her new Commodore's uniform, blazing white instead of the black one she'd worn throughout her entire career. The insignia pins were already in place on the collar, and where the Irisi family shoulder patch would have been was the multi-circle symbol
of the Chiss Ascendancy.
Do you accept this uniform and this new life?
Jafosk asked. Ziara took a deep breath. No. Not Ziara. Not anymore.
I do,
Aralani said. Jafosk bowed his head. And as he did so, Aralani thought she detected a small, slightly bittersweet smile. Remembering perhaps when he himself had stood in her place and lost his own family. Aralani's promotion celebration party was winding down, and the crowds of well-wishers had dwindled to a lingering few when Thrawn finally made his appearance.
Congratulations, Commodore, he said, inclining his head to her. You remember I said you'd be here one day?
Actually, as I recall, you suggested I'd someday make Admiral, Aralani reminded him. I still have a ways to go.
You'll make it, Thrawn said. I understand you've been assigned the Destrama and Picket 4-6.
I have, Aralani confirmed. I've also requested that you be made my first officer.
Really?
Thrawn said, clearly surprised.
I thought your babysitting duties had ended.
You think you were aboard the Parala because General Barkeef wanted me to look after you?
I think it was more a matter of wanting you to make sure I didn't go off the edge.
Thrawn paused. Again.
There may have been a bit of that, Aralani conceded. But that's not really relevant. I asked for you because you're a good officer.
She smiled faintly.
I also suspect there'll be a promotion for you somewhere along the way.
Thank you, Thrawn said. I'll try not to make you regret your decision.
He hesitated.
I'm in need of advice, Commodore, if you have a moment to spare.
For you, what moments I can't spare, I'll make, she said, glancing past his shoulder.
None of the other guests were close enough to hear.
And when it's just the two of us, it can be just Thrawn and Aralani.
He gave a sort of hesitant smile.
Thank you. I'm honored.
She smiled back.
So, what do you need?
I was recently approached by one of the Irisi, he said,
lowering his voice a little.
He said that some of the Myth are unhappy with me, and may try to have me released.
Aralani's first instinct was to deflect the conversation elsewhere. Family politics were always a touchy subject, but she didn't have any family politics. Not anymore.
But what's his name?
Aristocra Irisi Stalmustro.
Aralani nodded.
The Stalmu. Never met him, but I know of him. Let me guess. He thought you should request to join the Irisi instead.
Actually, his tone and phrasings suggested that the rematching was already a given,
Thrawn said.
There was certainly no mention of interviews or other barriers to my acceptance. He also suggested I would be a trial-born instead of a marriage adoptive.
Interesting, Aralani said. You say all this was suggested, but not stated outright?
There wasn't any formal invitation, if that's what you mean.
It is.
Aralani pursed her lips, her gaze drifting around the room. The two Irisi who'd been here earlier were long gone, with only a few of the minor families still represented.
Okay. Here's the relevant history. The Irisi have always been strong supporters of the military, particularly the Defense Force. They like having family in the upper ranks. Feel it buys them additional prestige, which is, of course, one of the currencies among the aristocra.
Prestige is a currency?
Of a sort, Aralani said. There are a whole lot of things that factor into a family's position and power. Some of them are financial or historical. Others are more nebulous, like prestige and reputation.
I see,
Thrawn said, though Arlani was pretty sure from his expression that he didn't.
What does this have to do with the myth and me?
The myth are overall in a stronger position than the Irisi, at least at the moment, Arlani said. Over the past few years, the myth have also tried to cut into the Irisi military strength by recruiting promising cadets and officers.
Such as me?
Very likely, Arlani said. It was clear all the way back at the Academy that you had a strong career ahead of you. The point is that perhaps a bit belatedly, the Irisi have recognized your potential and are hoping to steal you from the myth.
Do you think he was right about the myth wanting to rematch me?
Arlani shook her head.
Impossible to say. I don't have a feel for myth politics and structure the way I do with the Irisi. I'd guess that if you can avoid doing anything controversial in the future, you should be all right. Merit adoptives are always on probation until they've proved themselves. But once they do, and once they've passed the trials, they'll hold a much more secure status. And, of course, if and when you're elevated to ranking distance, you'll be largely untouchable.
I see, Thrawn said. Yet if the Irisi are more military-minded, would they perhaps not be a better family for me?
Arlani hesitated.
No family. No family.
In all honesty, I've never been comfortable with the way the Irisi dominate Defense Force personnel. I know we're supposed to ignore family identity as we serve, but we've all seen rivalries bleed over into conversation and even duty assignments.
So you'd recommend I stay with the myth?
That's a decision you have to make for yourself, Arlani said. Being blood of the Irisi was very good for my career, and the family's done the same for many others. But what was good for me may not be good for you.
I understand, Thrawn said. Thank you. I owe you a debt.
You're welcome.
Arlani dared a smile.
And not just one, you know. I like to think I contributed my small bit to keeping you in the Academy over that cheating charge.
Your contribution was far larger than you perhaps remember,
Thrawn assured her.
And your assistance has hardly been limited to the distant past. I never properly thanked you for your support in the aftermath of the Stivic incidents.
My support was completely unnecessary,
Arlani said, looking him squarely in the eye.
The Garwians have stated on the record that it was Security Officer Frangelic who spotted the weakness of the pirates' tactics and found a way to exploit it. From the way they're raving about him, he's probably been promoted by now.
And he richly deserves whatever accolades he's received.
Agreed.
Arlani cocked her head.
Just out of curiosity, I looked into it afterward, and I couldn't find an obvious way to tie a comm into a ranging laser.
There isn't, Thrawn said. But there's a spot where requests can be linked for data downloading and analysis.
And connectors like that can usually run either direction, Arlani said, nodding. So you tied your Questis into the laser's frequency modulation option and used voice to scripts?
Just scripts, Thrawn said. If there was an inquiry afterward, having a voice recording would narrow the search a bit too much.
Arlani nodded again.
The Garwians owe you. I hope they realize that.
I didn't do it for their gratitude,
Thrawn said, sounding a bit surprised that Arlani would even think of it in those terms.
I did it for the good of their people, and for all who would otherwise have faced those same attackers.
A high-minded goal,
Arlani said.
I wish the Ascendancy appreciated it more.
Thrawn smiled.
Nor did I do it for our gratitude.
Indeed.
Again, Ar'alani looked over his shoulder. Still six people lingering, but they were engrossed in conversation with one another and would never miss her.
Tell you what, let's go someplace a little quieter, and you can buy me a celebratory drink.
She touched his arm.
And while we drink, she said, you can tell me all the other goals you have that the Ascendancy will pretend not to be grateful for.
Chapter 16. The Blue Dock foreman shook his head as he ran to the end of the listing.
I don't know what it is with you folk, he said. This is the second time in 2 months. Do you deliberately run into the middle of your battles?
Of course not, Simacro said stiffly. It's hardly the Springhawk's fault if the Council and Aristocra keep sending us into the chaos to fight people.
It's hardly their fault if you don't win the battles faster either, the foreman countered,
half turning to peer out the viewport at the Springhawk floating nearby, silhouetted against the blue-white disk of the frozen Chela surface filling half the sky.
We want it fast enough, Simacro assured him. And let's not get overly dramatic, shall we? There's not that much damage.
You don't think so?
The foreman said sourly.
Well, I suppose that's why you're out there running into missile salvos, and I'm in here putting your ship back together.
He lifted a finger.
Since her nodes need replacement, 7. Hull plates needing replacement, 82. Spectrum lasers needing repair or refurbishment, 5. And what's this nonsense about adding an extra tank of plasmasphere fluid?
We use a lot of plasmaspheres.
And where exactly does Senior Captain Thrawn suggest I put it?
The foreman retorted.
His quarters? Your quarters?
I have no idea, Simacro said. That's why you're in here, performing maintenance miracles, and we're out there making people regret tangling with the Chiss Ascendancy.
This would take a miracle,
the foreman grumbled, looking at the Questus again. Still, he seemed pleased by Simacro's small compliment.
The least he could do is come ask for these miracles in person.
He's in consultation with General Bakeef right now.
The foreman sniffed.
No doubt planning his next foray into trouble. Fine. I'll get started on the rest of this and see if I can find enough space somewhere for this impossible plasma tank he wants.
If anyone can do it, you can,
Simacro assured him.
What kind of time frame are we looking at?
At least 6 weeks, maybe 7,
the foreman said.
If I get a rush order from Bakeef or Supreme Admiral Jafosk, I can maybe slice a week off that.
Well, go ahead and get started. I'll see about getting you that rush order,
Simacro said.
Thank you.
Thank me by not wrecking your ship next time!
What? To make the Council wonder if they still need people like you?
Simacro asked blandly.
I'd love to see the Council try their hand at this job,
the foreman said.
The Ascendancy would never fly again. Go on, get out of here. I've got work to do.
15 minutes later, Simacro was on a shuttle heading for the surface. A hard knot in his stomach.
Do you deliberately run into the middle of your battles?
The foreman had asked. Simacro had waved off the sarcasm, but in the core of his heart, he wasn't nearly that certain. There'd been at least two times during the Leo Aeoan skirmish, maybe three, when Thrawn had taken the Springhawk far deeper into the enemy fire zone than he'd had to. Nearly all of the damage the foreman had groused about had come from those particular sorties. Had Thrawn been trying to glean additional information on the new Leo Aeoan tactics as he'd claimed? Or was it possible he was starting to lose the judgment and tactical insight that had raised his name to such prominence? Thrawn had implied he'd initiated his current meeting with Bakeef, but maybe it was the other way around. Maybe Bakeef had noticed the same troubling subtext in the after-action reports and was having some of the same doubts as Simakra. Maybe he'd called Thrawn in to find out what was going on. And if the general decided Thrawn was no longer capable of commanding the Springhawk... Simakra took a deep breath.
"Stop it," he ordered himself.
Even if Thrawn was relieved of command, that didn't necessarily mean Simakra would be restored to it. The Springhawk still had an important name, and the Oofsa family wasn't the only one who would love to have one of their own in charge. Still, it was an interesting thought.
"An interesting thought,"
General Bakeef said, pursing his lips.
"The question is whether that thought is dangerously inspired or merely criminally insane."
"I don't see why either adjective has to be attached, sir,"
Thrawn said, his voice carrying his usual mix of respect and confidence.
"The small scout ship I'm proposing..."
"You don't?"
Bakeef interrupted.
"No, sir,"
Thrawn said calmly.
"A scout ship could easily slip the three of us past any sentries or watchers General Yiv might have placed along the way. The data we collect would not only give us a better idea of how large this so-named Nikar Dune destiny is, but also offer hints as to how solidly those behind Yiv's battle line are being held and controlled."
"To what end?"
"There are several possibilities," Thrawn said. "We might be able to foment revolt among some of them."
"Preemptive action,"
Bakeef interrupted again.
"Never get past the Sindicure."
"Or possibly lease bases or supply depots from them."
"More preemptive action."
"Or if there are unconquered people scattered among them, we might learn how they were able to resist the Nikar Dune."
Bakeef frowned thoughtfully. That last could indeed be quite instructive. Even better, a straightforward data-gathering mission wouldn't generate nearly as much outrage among the Aristocra as Thrawn's other suggestions. But even there, the whole thing was swimming in risk and uncertainty.
"Independence and resistance are a difficult combination to maintain," he pointed out. "Any halfway competent conqueror would never permit it."
"Unless Yiv isn't aware of the situation," Thrawn said. "In fact, as you suggest, that's probably the only way such a situation could continue."
"So independence, resistance, and vacuum-tight secrecy," Bakeef said. "The odds against these theoretical allies existing are getting rather tall. Do you need anything else from them? Proficiency in small arms, maybe?"
"No, nothing else," Thrawn said.
Either he hadn't noticed Bakeef's sarcasm, or had chosen to ignore it.
"We can find a way to work with whatever other skills they might possess. The primary focus now has to be on finding them."
"If they exist."
"If they exist,"
Thrawn conceded.
"At any rate, I've already spoken to Caregiver Thaddeus and Skywalker Ciri, and both have indicated willingness to go with me."
"You spoke of confidential matters to unauthorized personnel?"
Bakeef asked, hearing his tone go ominous.
Skywalkers and their caregivers know many things even senior officers sometimes don't, Thrawn said. That said, no. I offered no restricted information. I merely posed the question of whether they would accompany me on a long-distance journey of unspecified destination and purpose.
For a few seconds, Bakeef gazed at him, weighing the options, considering the possibilities, assessing the risks. Nothing about this mad scheme exactly filled him with confidence. But if the information Thrawn and Ar'alani had brought back about the quiet infiltration of the Nikkar Dune was even halfway accurate, something had to be done. And the quicker, the better.
There are members of the Sinecure who consider you an ungimbaled laser, he said, pushing the Questus back toward Thrawn. There are times I'm inclined to agree with them.
The Nikkar Dune are a serious threat, General, Thrawn said quietly. Possibly the most serious the Ascendancy has faced in recent history. General Yiv is competent and charismatic, with the ability to both conquer and enlist those in his path.
And if we find these potential allies you're hoping for, how do you propose an alliance to a Sinecure that has refused all such entanglements for centuries?
Let's first find them, Thrawn said. We'll deal with the Aristocra if and when we have to.
Bakeef sighed.
Ungimbaled laser. You're sure you won't be missed?
Thrawn nodded.
Mid-Captain Simakro is overseeing the Springhawk's repairs. It requires enough work to keep it in Blue Dock for at least 6 weeks.
How did you arrange that much damage?
Bakeef held up a hand.
Never mind. All right. I'll have a scout ship assigned to you and get it prepped. But not a word to either Thalias or Ciri about your actual mission until you're underway. Understood?
Understood.
One final consideration, then,
Bakeef said, putting the full weight of his long career into his voice.
You're not only putting yourself at risk, but also risking the lives of the two women, one of them an immensely valuable Skywalker. If the whole thing goes crash-dive, are you prepared to have their deaths on your conscience?
I'm aware of the danger, Thrawn said. I would never want the weight of such memories and regrets. But I'm more prepared to see their deaths through my action than I am to put the entire Ascendancy at the same risk through my inaction.
Bakeef nodded. He'd thought Thrawn's answer would be something like that. And unfortunately, he had to agree with him.
The ship will be ready by the time you've collected your fellow travelers and your supplies, he said. Your orders will be cut but sealed. No one will know about your mission but me.
Thank you, sir, Thrawn said, standing up. Thank you, too, for not adding the extra burden of a reminder that your career is also on the line.
You worry about your Skywalker in the Ascendancy,
Bakeef growled.
I'll worry about my career. Now get out of here, and may Warrior's Fortune smile on your efforts.
I wonder what they're talking about,
Ciri murmured, looking up from her Questus and the picture she'd been drawing. She craned her neck toward General Bakeef's closed office door, halfway down the busy corridor, as if moving her head a couple of centimeters closer would magically give her the ability to see or hear through it.
I don't know,
Thalias said, resisting the impulse to remind the girl that she'd made that same half-question comment twice already, and that the answer wasn't going to change until Thrawn came through the doorway. But the topic of the unheard conversation wasn't hard to guess. Thrawn's vague question about whether she and Ciri would be willing to go with him on a special mission would have been intriguing enough, even if it hadn't immediately been followed by this meeting with Bakeef. But it had been followed by the meeting, and the only reasonable conclusion was that the two of them were discussing the details of that mission.
"They're coming,"
Ciri said suddenly. Thalias looked at the still unopened door, feeling a touch of bittersweet memory. Back when she was Chiri's age, she'd been able to do that same trick, using third sight to know a couple of seconds in advance when something was about to happen. Most people, at least those who knew what Skywalkers were, took the whole thing in stride. But there'd been a few others who'd never gotten used to it. Freaking them out was half the fun of doing the trick. The door opened, and Thrawn emerged. Bakeef followed, but stopped in the doorway, and for a moment, the two men held a final bit of inaudible conversation. Thrawn nodded at last, and started down the corridor toward Thalias and Ciri.
"Good afternoon, caregiver Thalias."
Thalias turned. Syndic Thurfian was standing there, smiling the smile she'd seen on him way too many times. The look was never a genuinely friendly one, and it was nearly always the prelude to bad news.
"Good afternoon, Syndic," she replied. "What can I do for you?"
"I wonder if you'd be good enough to come to my office for a few minutes,"
Thurfian said.
"There's a matter I'd like to discuss with you."
Thalias felt her stomach tightening.
"No, not now.
Of all the times he could have chosen."
"I'm sorry, but my commander is on his way,"
she said, keeping her tone neutral as she nodded back toward Thrawn.
"I'm certain he has some official duty for us."
"I'm quite certain he hasn't,"
Thurfian said, still smiling.
"Apparently you've forgotten that your ship has gone into Blue Talk for some fairly extensive repairs. Unless General Bakeef has dug up a spare ship, Senior Captain Thrawn can't possibly need you."
"You might be surprised at Captain Thrawn's ingenuity," Thalias said, feeling sweat gathering under her collar. It was now, all right. The worst possible time. And so, of course, he'd chosen it. "At any rate, I'm under his command, not yours."
"Well, let's ask him then, shall we?"
Thurfian shifted his gaze over Thalias' shoulder.
"Senior Captain Thrawn,"
he said, his voice holding the same false cheer as his smile.
"I need to borrow your caregiver for an hour or so. Surely you have no objection?"
"None at all," Thrawn said, his eyes flicking briefly to Thalias. "I presume you won't also need Ciri." A hint of a frown touched Thurfian's face.
"No, I just need Thalias. Why would I need Ciri?"
"I don't know," Thrawn said. "That's why I asked. I'm glad you don't need her, as she's fallen slightly behind in her studies. I expect the Springhawk's repair schedule will give her time to catch up." Thurfian's frown disappeared.
"Ah, of course."
"I should be there to help her,"
Thalias said doggedly, trying to think. If she couldn't find a way out of this...
"This won't take long,"
Thurfian promised.
"Until later, Captain Thrawn."
"Until later," Thrawn answered. The Syndicule complex was about 100 kilometers from Fleet headquarters, a short 20-minute trip by tunnel car. Neither Thalias nor Thurfian spoke during the journey, mindful of the half-dozen other officers and Aristocra in the car who might overhear any conversation. They were nearly to the end of their journey when Thalias finally came up with a plan. Not a good plan, probably even a desperate one, but it was all she had. It took 2 minutes in the privacy of the restroom for her to set things in motion. 2 minutes of time, and way more courage than she thought she possessed. But then it was done, and she was committed, and she could only hope she hadn't brought complete ruin upon herself. They arrived, and, still in silence, Thurfinn walked her down the corridors of Ascendancy Power to his office.
All right, I'm here,
she said, as Thurfinn ushered her into his office and motioned her to a chair.
What's this all about?
Oh, please,
Thurfinn protested mildly. Closing the door, he circled behind her and sat down at his desk.
Don't pretend you don't know what this is about. You promised me a report. It's time to deliver.
He activated a questis and pushed it across the desk to her.
Tell me everything you know. Everything you've learned. Everything about Senior Captain Thrawn.
For a long minute, the young woman just sat there, her face rigid, her body unnaturally still, seeking, no doubt, a way out of the trap. The trap she'd stepped into of her own free will, of course. It was either that promise, or Thurfinn would have turned around, walked back into the personnel office, and canceled her appointment as the Springhawk Skywalker's caregiver. With a threat like that hanging over her head, she'd had no choice but to agree. But it hadn't been willingly. Not by a long shot. Even now, as he looked at her expression and body stance, it was clear she was hoping to get out of the deal. Too bad. Her hopes didn't matter. Nor did her reticence. All that mattered was that Thrawn was up to something new, and Thurfinn was getting tired of his antics. He needed a lever he could use against the Maverick. And Thalias's detailed knowledge of Thrawn's other recent activities was that lever.
Come. We haven't got all day,
he said into the taut silence.
The sooner you finish, the sooner you can go back to fawning over your big hero.
I assumed this would wait until the entire campaign was over,
Thalias said, making no move toward the questis.
I never gave you any sort of timetable,
Thurfinn reminded her.
The deal was very clear. I would get you aboard the Springhawk, and you would be my spy.
Thalias flinched visibly at the word. Thurfinn didn't care about that either.
Everything you need to know about Senior Captain Thrawn is in the official records, she said. Once you've read them, I can answer any other questions you have.
I have read them,
Thurfinn countered.
And you're stalling.
Not stalling,
Thalias said, standing up.
It just so happens I have an appointment elsewhere. If you'll excuse me.
Sit down,
Thurfinn said, putting all the coldness of Chila's surface into his voice.
You don't wish to talk about Thrawn? Very well. Let's talk about your family.
Don't you mean our family?
I mean your original family,
Thurfinn said.
The family who bore you and who held your allegiance before you were taken away from them to become a Skywalker.
Thalias paused, standing halfway between her chair and the door, a whole play of emotion skittering across her face. She had no memory of those years, Thurfinn knew, which made this the ideal additional lever to use against her.
What about them?
She asked at last. Thurfinn hid a smile. She was trying to sound calm and uninterested, but the tight muscles in her throat and cheeks gave away her sudden interest and uncertainty.
I thought you might like to hear about their current situation,
he said.
And how you could perhaps help them.
He paused, waiting for her to respond. But she remained silent. A cool character for sure, who wouldn't be easily swayed. But Thurfinn had had plenty of experience manipulating such people.
They're not in great shape, you see, he went on. The family has always been poor, but the recent shift in the prices of certain minerals has pressed particularly hard on them. The Myth family has many resources, some of which could be turned in their direction.
I don't even remember them.
Of course not, Thurfian said. You were far too young when you were taken. But does that really matter? They're your people. Your blood.
The Myth are my people now.
Perhaps, Thurfian gave a little shrug. Perhaps not.
Thalias's eyes narrowed. What's that supposed to mean? I'm a full member of the Myth.
Hardly, Thurfian said. You're a merit adoptive, and a relatively new one at that. You have a long path ahead of you before your position is anything other than precarious.
Thalias looked down at the Questis. Are you suggesting that my position with the Myth depends on my betrayal of Thrawn?
Betrayal? Of course not,
Thurfian said, putting some righteous indignation into his voice.
Thrawn is a member of our family. At least for the moment, he reminded himself silently. And talking about him hardly qualifies as betrayal. On the contrary, not reporting any questionable activities is where betrayal would lie.
Then let's make this simple, Thalia said. I've never seen him do anything questionable, illegal, or unethical. I've certainly never seen him do anything against the Myth. Good enough?
Thurfian gave a theatrical sigh.
You disappoint me, Thalias. I'd hoped you had a future with the Myth. But if we can't even trust you to help us keep watch on a potential danger to the family, I can't see how we can keep you with us. But that's your decision. I can keep watch on Thrawn myself.
He raised his eyebrows slightly.
Starting with whatever he's up to right now. I noticed he was talking with General Barkeef again, so that's probably the best place to start. Perhaps I'll take an hour or two to look into that before I begin your rematching procedure.
Thalias tried to hide her reaction, but it was no use. His offhanded threat to rematch her back to her old family had done the trick. He would give her the next hour to consider what life without the Myth would be like, and then he would start the procedure. Abruptly, she pulled out her own Questis and peered at it.
All right, she said. You win.
Again, Thurfian hid his smile of triumph. Really, sometimes it was just too easy.
Excellent,
he said, gesturing her back to the chair.
Though, as I think further, I wonder if it would be better to head back first for our talk with General Barkeef. You can begin your report along the way.
You're right. We're leaving, Thalias agreed. But not to Fleet HQ.
She held up her Questis.
You're to take me instead to the Myth Homestead.
Thurfian's sense of triumph vanished.
What?
He asked carefully.
You said it yourself, she said. I don't have a stable position with the family, so I've made arrangements to remedy that.
How?
He asked, his blood suddenly running cold. If she denounced his interest in Thrawn to the wrong people... No, that couldn't be it. She couldn't possibly know enough about the labyrinthian web woven around the upper ranks of the family.
If you think there's anyone higher than me you can appeal to...
I'm not going to appeal, she said. I'm going to take the trials.
He stared at her.
The trials?
Merit adoptives can ask at any time to take the trials, Thalias said. If they succeed, they become trial-born.
Kindly do not lecture me on my own family's policies,
Thurfian said stiffly.
And that's only if they succeed. If they don't, they lose even Merit adoptive status.
I'm aware of that, Thalia said.
There was a slight tremor in her voice, but her jaw was firmly set.
But you were going to throw me out of the family anyway.
She lifted the questus again.
I've petitioned the office of the Patriarch, and the petition's been accepted.
Fine,
Thurfian said between clenched teeth. Curse this woman anyway.
I'll give you the instructions on how to get to the homestead.
The Patriarch's office has requested that you accompany me. Thurfian hissed out a curse. The final spiral to his plans. She'd outmaneuvered him completely. She, or Thrawn, could he have anticipated this confrontation?
Certainly Thalias couldn't have come up with such a dangerous scheme on her own.
And if it was Thrawn, how had he persuaded her to risk her entire future with the myth for him? Just one more reason this man needed to be taken down.
Of course,
he said, standing up.
I wouldn't miss it for all the riches in the Ascendancy.
Chiri had never been good at reading adult faces. But even so, she had no trouble seeing that Thrawn was surprised and concerned as he put away his questus.
Is something wrong?
She asked anxiously. He hesitated a moment before answering.
It appears caregiver Thaddeus won't be joining us, he said.
Oh,
Chiri said, looking past him at the little ship he'd brought them to. The last of the crates of supplies were just being taken aboard by the dock workers, and he'd said they'd be leaving as soon as Thaddeus arrived. Only now, they weren't.
So, what are we doing?
Thrawn turned to gaze at the ship.
This mission is vitally important, Chiri, he said quietly. Thalias didn't say much. I gather she wasn't free to talk openly, but it was clear she would be occupied for at least the next few days.
So we're not going?
Chiri asked, still struggling to read his expression.
That depends on you.
He turned to look at her.
Are you willing to go with me, just the two of us, into the depths of the chaos?
For a moment, Chiri's mouth and tongue and brain seemed frozen. A Skywalker never went anywhere without a ship full of people around her. That was the first rule and promise she'd been given when she first began her training. Girls like her were too rare to risk to anything less than a full warship or diplomatic cruiser. What Thrawn was asking was never done. Ever. But he'd said it was important. Could it be important enough to break all the regular rules?
Can we do that?
She asked hesitantly. He shrugged, a small smile touching his lips.
Physically and tactically, of course, he said. I can fly, you can navigate, and the ship itself is well enough armed to get us out of any trouble we're likely to find ourselves in.
I meant, are we going to get in trouble?
You? No, he said. Skywalkers are effectively untouchable by any punishment. You might get a scolding, but that would be all. He paused. If it makes a difference, Thalias didn't suggest that we wait for her, or that we abandon the mission completely.
If I don't go, what happens?
Then I abandon the mission, Thrawn said. What would take days under the control of a Skywalker would require weeks or months of jump-by-jump travel. I can't afford months.
His lips compressed.
Neither, I fear, can the Ascendancy.
This game, at least, Chiri knew way too well. An adult would make vague threats or vaguer promises with
big stuff happening either way if she didn't run for the extra hour, or skip one of her rest days, or do whatever it was they wanted. But as she gazed at Thrawn's face, she had the eerie sense that he wasn't playing the game. In fact, she wasn't sure he even knew how to play it. And if Thalias really was expecting her to go...
Okay, she said. Can you... Never mind.
What?
I just wondered if you could get me some more colored graph markers. That's all,
Ciri said, feeling her face warming with embarrassment. Of all the stupid things to ask for.
As a matter of fact, Thrawn said, there are 2 new boxes already aboard, and 4 binders of art sheets to draw on.
Ciri blinked.
Oh,
she said.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thrawn gestured toward the ship.
Shall we go? You're troubled,
Thrawn said into the silence of the scout ship's bridge. Ciri didn't answer. Her eyes focused on the brilliant stars blazing through the canopy. Her mind churning with the sheer wrongness of this. Skywalkers didn't fly alone, ever. She'd always had a Momish along, someone to take care of her and make her meals and comfort her when she woke from a nightmare. Always. Thalias wasn't here. Ciri had hoped she would rush in at the last moment and demand that Thrawn take her with them. But the hatch had been sealed, and the controller had given permission to launch, and Thrawn had taken them out of the cold blue of Chila's atmosphere into the colder black of space. Just the 2 of them. No officers, no warriors, no Momish. Ciri hadn't always gotten along with her caregivers. Some of them she'd really, really disliked. Now... she was wishing even one of the rotten ones was here.
They've never understood you, have they?
Thrawn said into her silence. Ciri made a face, like he would know anything about that.
You want more than what you've been given, he continued. You don't know what you'll do when you're no longer a Skywalker, and it troubles you.
I know what happens,
Ciri scoffed.
They told me I'd get adopted by a family.
That's what you'll be, Thrawn said. That's not what you'll do. You'd like to fly, wouldn't you?
Ciri frowned.
How did you know that?
The pictures you've been drawing with the markers your caregiver gave you, Thrawn said. You like drawing birds and flashflies.
They're pretty,
Ciri said stiffly.
Lots of kids draw flashflies.
You also draw landscapes and seascapes as seen from above,
Thrawn continued calmly.
Not many your age do that.
I'm a Skywalker,
Ciri muttered. Thalias had no business showing Thrawn her pictures.
I see things from the sky all the time.
Actually, you don't.
Thrawn paused and touched a key on his control board. And suddenly, all the lights and keys on his board went out, and the board in front of Ciri lit up. She jerked back.
What in the name?
There are 2 hand grips in front of you, Thrawn said. Take one in each hand.
What?
Ciri asked, staring numbly at the hand grips and glowing lights.
I'm going to teach you how to fly,
Thrawn told her.
This is your first lesson.
You don't understand,
Ciri said, hearing the fear and pleading in her voice.
I have nightmares about this.
Nightmares about flying?
About falling,
Ciri said, her heart thudding.
Falling, being blown around by wind, drowning.
Can you swim?
No,
Ciri said.
Maybe a little.
Exactly, Thrawn said. It's fear that's driving those nightmares. Fear and helplessness.
A touch of annoyance rose above the bubbling panic. First Thalias, and now Thrawn. Did everyone think they knew more about her nightmares than she did?
You feel helpless in the water, so you dream of drowning. You feel helpless in the air, so you dream of falling.
He pointed to the hand grips.
Let's take some of that helplessness away.
Ciri looked at him. He wasn't joking, she realized. He was deadly serious. She looked back at the hand grips, trying to decide what to do.
Take them. Abruptly, she realized something else. He wasn't ordering. He was offering.
And she really had always wanted to fly. Setting her jaw, choking back the fear, she reached out and gingerly closed her hands around the grips.
Good,
Thrawn said. Move the right one to your left just a bit.
To port side,
Ciri corrected. She knew that one anyway.
To port side, Thrawn agreed with a smile. See how the positions of the stars changed.
Ciri nodded. Their ship had turned a little to the left, the same way she'd moved the hand grip.
Yes.
The display just above it, there, shows the precise angle of your turn. Now, move the same lever forward a bit.
This time, the changing stars showed the ship's nose had dropped a little.
Aren't we getting off course?
It'll be easy enough to get back, Thrawn assured her. Now, the left-hand grip controls the thrusters. Right now it's set at its most delicate level, so that a small movement translates to a small increase or decrease in thrust. Rotating the grip will change that. We won't bother with that right now. Ease it forward, just a little, and note how our speed changes on that display. That one, right there.
By the time they finished the lesson, half an hour later, Chiri's head was spinning. But it was a strangely exciting kind of spin. She hardly noticed any strain over the next few hours as she used third sight to guide the ship toward the edge of the chaos. When she was done navigating for the day, after they ate dinner together, she asked if he would give her another lesson. And that night, for the first time she could remember, she had a dream about flying that wasn't a nightmare.
Chapter 17.
Thrawn had told Ciri that there was an arc of systems a short distance into the lesser space regions outside the chaos that should be promising. So far, though, the arc had turned out to be a bust. One of the worlds had looked interesting, but aside from a local patrol force, it didn't seem to have any military presence at all. The next three worlds were only sparsely settled, though one of them was at least civilized enough to have a long-range triad transmitter. But the fifth world?
What are those?
Ciri asked, staring at the small objects flitting back and forth across the long-range sensor display. They looked like shuttles or missiles or fighter craft, but they seemed hardly big enough for even a pilot, let alone a passenger or two.
I believe those are robotic combat craft, Thrawn said. His eyes narrowed in concentration as he gazed at the display. Powered and operated by artificial intelligences called droids.
They run their warships with machines?
Some of them, yes, Thrawn said. Indeed, if the reports are true, one side of the massive war taking place in lesser space is largely being waged by such droids.
Ciri thought about that.
Seems kind of stupid, she said. What if someone gets into the controls and turns them off? or gets into the factory and changes all the programming.
Or if their intended programming leaves errors and blind spots that can be exploited, Thrawn said. The desire to minimize warrior deaths is futile if the war is then lost. Increase the focus on Sensor 4, please. Ciri nodded and keyed the correct control. A small part of her brain noting with satisfaction how comfortable she'd become in the cockpit over the past few days. Thrawn had turned out to be a much better teacher than she'd expected. Or maybe she was just a really good learner.
What do you see there? Thrawn asked.
Ciri frowned. There was something weird in the center of the display she'd just adjusted. Perfectly round and giving off a